Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ujvala Radio, a show dedicated to love and passion, and the power they have to transform our lives. Now, find a comfortable place to sit, relax, and enjoy the show. And now, here's Terry and Robin.
And good evening, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good wherever in the world you are. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to Ujvala Radio on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. And I am joined tonight, as all good nights, in fact, about every night, for the most part, by my amazing, beautiful, talented, wonderful, caring, forgiving, amazing wife. Hi, Robin.
Don't oversell me, okay? Hi, honey. I love you. You're funny.
I love you too. And the people at YV, I love you too. So, you know, you've got a fan club going on there, so it's all good.
I don't know about that, but okay. If you think so, that's fine.
So, let's see. So tonight, a couple of exciting things. First of all, I'm giving an opportunity that tonight is an open night. We've had some questions emailed in. We've got a couple of questions in the chat room. And we're just going to have an open question and answer session. Call in at 646-564-9714. And ask us your question, no topic necessarily, about Ayurveda, nutrition, yoga, meditation. And yoga, again, is not just, asana. It is, really, the eight limbs. So, it starts off with a way to live and then moves all the way through to meditation and a degree of enlightenment. So understand that, call in and ask any questions about any of that. Robin's ready to talk with you about Ayurveda, nutrition, cooking. And So, again, that number is 646-564-9714. So with all of that said, though, tonight we are announcing we're launching a special workshop that will be held live on November 15th, and it is a holiday survival guide workshop. I mean, we're coming into the holidays. Winter is coming, and so are the relatives. And, all of the stresses, and of course, today and all of the stresses that will go on with the conversation about the outcome of today and elections and all of that, conversations about religion and spirituality. There's a ton of ways that there can be stress with visitors for the holidays. So we're going to be
talking about the big stuff. I always think about the small stuff, like, Grandma doesn't like the way I made my stuffing because I put raisins in it, and it's going to be a big drama on Thanksgiving. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes me crazy.
Well, who puts raisins in their stuffing? Anyway, so you see, there's a potential point of contention. All of these, the big stresses, the little stresses, the financial stresses, everything that goes with the next month and a half is all about stress. There's beauty and there's wonder and there's joy and there's happiness, and then there's everything else that comes with it. So this workshop will be helping you to navigate through all of that. We're going to have recipes. We're going to have some conversations about nutrition. We're going to have some conversations about meditation. I'm going to be giving you a special meditation geared toward helping you deal with the stress. It'll be a guided meditation you can listen to as many times during the day for the next, month and a half or even beyond. If you've got a lot of stresses in your life, it will not be specifically geared toward the holidays. It will be specifically geared toward helping you reduce stress. So that will be one of the things that will be provided to anyone that signs up for the program. And we're also working on a special holiday edition, holiday collection of some of Robin's cooking videos. And you will get a discount on that package if you sign up for this workshop. So the workshop itself is going to be $29.99. And you can go to, you can find the event on Facebook. On our Facebook page, we'll be sending out a big Facebook announcement and blast tomorrow. But you can go ahead and beat the crowd, because we only have about 80 spaces, so you don't want to miss out. You can go straight to ujvalaayc.com, and that's ujvalaayc.com. And at the top of the page on the tabs, you will see Holiday Survival Guide Workshop. Click on that. It'll take you through the process of signing up, checking out, paying and checking out and doing all the stuff. And then you'll get a welcome letter and access to the page that has the link. It'll be a Zoom meeting. We're going to have breakout groups so we can have little, individual discussions and talk amongst ourselves. So it's going to be a fun couple of hours.
We're also going to talk about the financial stresses that face people going into the holidays and how best to cope with that and make your budget dollars stretch and still be able to feed people good, nutritious, healthy food. I know some people don't think of the holidays as being a time to eat healthy, but all the more reason to do it when you're feeling, under the gun, stressful. And also there are a lot of things that are very reasonably that you can stretch that are very reasonable that you can put into your budget over this holiday season, over the winter.
Yeah, and most of the foods that are traditional for the holidays are not necessarily bad for you. It's quantities. If you're keeping an eye on your quantities and not being a glutton, then really the holiday eating isn't necessarily bad for you. But Robin's going to teach you a couple of methods for tweaking it to make it even a little more, good for the body. So all of that in a 2-hour workshop live with Robin and myself, and all of that again for $29.99. So go to the website and sign up now. Don't miss your chance, because when space runs out, I don't know if we'll be able to run this again with our schedule through the holidays. So go ahead and get in on this one and get your discount for the holiday collection of cooking videos and also your free guided meditation to help you reduce stress through the holidays. So with that said, I did last week when we were talking about meditation, I suggested that people try a simple looking at a lamp or candle, preferably a lamp flame because it doesn't flicker as much, but any kind of flame, and just relax and set ideas or set thoughts aside and just focus on the flame. And I was hoping that we might get a few people to call in and talk about their experiences. We don't have anyone right now. But if you get a chance, if you did the homework, then you can call in again, 646-564-9714. And we'll be taking calls right up until about 10 minutes from the top of the hour. So one of the questions that we got emailed to us, that reminds me, you can also email questions. We're going to run a fairly regular question and answer session. So if you've got questions about Ayurveda, nutrition, meditation, yoga, any of that, including asana, you can email info, at ujjvalaayc.com, ujjvalaayc.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, Ujjvala Ayurveda and Yoga Center. And you can private message either one of us from there. So our first question today comes out of Florida. I'm not going to name any names. We'll just say it came from Florida. But the question is, what is Ayurvedic nutrition and how is it different from Ayurveda as a whole? And I'm guessing Robin's going to answer this. It's going to be some portion of Ayurveda is the nutrition.
Right. Ayurvedic nutrition really just talks about, how to best eat for your dosha, how to avoid poor food combinations. And there are some classic really problematic food combinations that we do in the West all the time. One that comes right off the top of my head is cheese and eggs. Everybody loves cheese in their omelet. Ayurveda talks about the difficulty of digesting those two things together. So that's the nutrition part of Ayurveda. Plus, they talk about the spices that you should be eating for your health and which foods are particularly good at what time of the year. So in the summer, you are drawn more to eating salads, for example. And in the winter, you're drawn more to eating soups. And there's a reason for that. And it's all cued in your body by what you need and what the nutrition is that your body's looking for. And that's sort of in a nutshell, very quick and easy answer to that question as to what is Ayurvedic nutrition. Ayurvedic nutrition is, of course, part of the whole Ayurvedic system, medical system. Ayurveda is a holistic, whole body, whole mind, whole spirit system, and it takes into account every aspect of you, that you have your physical body, you have your subtle body, you have the body of your mind. There are seven different bodies. So nutrition is just one part of that whole that Ayurveda does to your individual person. Every individual is different, and so your Ayurvedic nutrition might be slightly different than somebody else's Ayurvedic nutrition. What's the saying in Ayurveda is that one person's poison is another person's cure. So that just reflects that everybody's different, and you have to find your Ayurvedic, what Ayurvedic foods are best for you. And that's why you need Ayurvedic practitioners. That's part of what we do, is to guide you in that direction. And then how best to, maintain your health with food, because food is medicine. It was the first medicine, and it will be our last medicine. Everything should be treated with food first. 80% of all disease in the United States could be exercise modifications, lifestyle modifications. That's an amazing statistic. This is why Ayurvedic practitioners are so needed right now.
No, absolutely. I mean, and treating the whole body versus treating the disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeking wellness versus disease management.
Absolutely.
You know, Western medicine, for all of its advances, spends all of its time treating treating disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's not built around wellness. It's not built around staying healthy. The whole system is designed to have unhealthy people, and if people stayed healthy, the system would collapse under the weight of its own specializations.
Western medicine is treating disease and doesn't think at all about how to prevent disease. You know, that's really what it's been. We treat the symptoms. Once you're sick, we're going to treat your symptoms. We're not going to worry about curing you, you know, for a lot of these things. We're just going to treat your symptoms. Here's a pill. You know, it'll fix your symptoms. I might give you other side effects. Right. But we'll treat your symptoms of the issue that you're having. Ayurveda looks at how do we keep you from getting sick? Preventative. Let's avoid the sickness. And if you are sick, what can we do to gently nudge your body back to wellness? Rather than giving you some very harsh medications.
Right. Well, the body will heal itself if everything is aligned, if it's being mm-hmm. given the right food and nutrients, and the mind
yep.
and the spirit are all aligned,
mm-hmm.
then the body will take care of itself remarkably well.
Yep.
It's an incredible vessel that we're given to carry through each incarnation. And all we've got to do is just take care of it a little bit and keep our mind and our spirit aligned with our body. And
mm-hmm.
it'll carry us for a whole lot longer than you know, previously thought.
Yep.
You know, you can look at some of these places. I mean, I traveled to India a couple of times in the last few years, and there's some very healthy, very old people that
mm-hmm.
Some of them would put me to shame for their stamina and vigor and flexibility. And, you know, these people are into their, you know, late 80s and 90s, still active and vital. And that doesn't come from Western medicine. That comes
yeah.
from a lifestyle that treats the whole body and approaches the whole body as wellness, not seeking to treat disease and waiting until something breaks. Now, certainly Western medicine does have its place. You know, don't get me wrong. If you break
something. Oh, if I break an arm, that's where I'm going.
Yeah. You know, when Robin was in her accident and her arm was shattered, an amazing surgeon basically
mm-hmm.
reconstructed her arm, and she's got, you know, 95% use of her hand and wrist,
yeah.
where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they would have taken her arm off at the shoulder, at the elbow.
Elbow.
Just,
yep.
we can't do anything with this. So there's some remarkable stuff when it comes to structural problems. But, you know, if we can avoid all the medical stuff, then we can do a whole lot to increase not just our age, our life expectancy, but our quality
happiness.
Of life, quality of life expectancy.
Yeah.
You know, stretching that quality of life into the 80s and 90s is something that, you know, most people wouldn't think possible. And yet, I see people in the villages in India living that long and that well. So
mm-hmm.
these guys have got something going on, and that's what we're trying to learn about and share here in the West.
Yeah, most Ayurvedic practitioners here in the United States work in concert with people's physicians. But you need to have a physician who's open to the concept. And fortunately, more and more physicians are getting on that page. They are butting their heads up against exactly what I was talking about. The ideology somewhere in our culture became excess. Excess is good. More food, more eating out, more, you know, drinking, drink better wine, you know, eat, 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 drink, 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 eat, eat, eat. You know, in India, there's a word for people who have three meals a day. And if you translate the word from Sanskrit, the word, their definition is loser. And, you know, that's kind of like a harsh concept to us because we all eat three meals a day here in the West. It's considered normal. It's considered the healthy thing to do. And that's probably not the way our physiology was developed. We were probably meant to eat more like, you know, one big meal a day, have something light and nutritious in the morning to wake up and something light in the evening when we're done, and eat the bulk of our food once in the day. And then the other two things wouldn't be full meals. They would be more like snacks.
Right.
A lot of times people, during hunter-gatherer period, you know, you'd have a day where you'd eat well, and you'd have probably 3 days after that where you might not eat very well at all, because it depended on what was in season, what was available, you know, were the hunters able to get something, or were you just going to be eating nuts and berries and seeds that the grains that the, you know, the gatherers would gather. So,
right.
You know, we were not ever programmed to eat the meat-heavy diet that we're eating. That we were never programmed to eat the excess amount of portion of food that we are eating in the West. And it's showing in our diets. It's why so many Americans and Westerners in general are overweight, are suffering from diabetes, heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. These are all things that are treated through diet. And Ayurvedic nutrition has known this for 5,000 years, and it's tried and true.
Okay.
I've said this before, that if you look at India right now, they are getting away from their traditional Ayurvedic diet and becoming a more westernized diet, and they are having an explosion in India of diabetes. Number one country in the world for diabetes, something like, I think, one in, you know, under a certain age is coming down with diabetes now in India.
Wow.
It's just a rant there. So that's why Ayurvedic nutrition is so important.
All right. Well, let's move on. We've got a few more questions.
Okay.
So the next question kind of follows along. They ask, how can I find out what my dosha is? And then what do I do with that information when I have it? Now, I'm going to lead off, if I may, with we will very soon have a dosha quiz on our website. There's a couple of technical difficulties, but it is in the works, and we'll hopefully, before the workshop on the 15th, we'll have that dosha quiz up and running. So what are other ways that someone can get their dosha information? I guess we could send them the quiz and they could fill it out and email it back.
Yeah, they could. We could absolutely do that. That's actually a really good way. If you're interested in getting a quiz from us, send us an email at which email address do you want them to use?
Info.
Yeah, info. Mm-hmm. INFO at Ujvala.com.
Ujvala, AYC.com.
Yep. And just say, you know, dosha quiz request, and you'll get actually one quiz, which you will need to print out twice and take the quiz, and then send it, you know, you can scan it back, or you can just, you know, copy it into an email twice and take it twice. And the first time you take the quiz, you're going to take it with answer the questions as to how you were when you were young as you can remember. And then you're going to take the quiz and you're going to answer the same questions for how you are right now. not last week, not next week, but how you are right this minute when you're taking the quiz. And then you're going to send us back the results. And then I will email you back with some information about your results and how to proceed. But in general, knowing your dosha is important, because exactly what we were talking about was the nutrition. Certain doshas have certain predominances of certain elements, and the elements being air, earth, water, fire, and ether. And did I say earth? I think I did.
Yes.
And so everybody's bodies are made up of these elements. And in what proportion is how the doshas come out. So, for example, some people have more of a fire element. Some people have more of a water element. Some people have more of the air element. And your dosha will correspond to that. And then that goes to what types of foods are best for you to eat to balance those doshas so if you have too much fire, eat foods that are really hot and spicy, because it'll you know, on a regular basis, it may affect fire.
Well, I mean, that brings up our morning drink, you know, you have ginger and lemon,
mm-hmm.
and that little tea made with ginger and lemon, you make mine with ginger and lime. Because the lemon is warm and adds to the fire element that I have a preponderance of.
Yes.
Whereas the lime is cooling. So something as subtle as whether you put lemon in your tea or lime in your tea could make a big difference in your day-to-day wellness. Because remember, this isn't just about fixing something. This is day-to-day wellness.
Uh-huh.
And if I can add cooling to my diet, then that helps counteract some of the extra fire, where someone else might need the warming, counteract, say, the water and earth of what's called kapha.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, that's just one example of something so subtle that you wouldn't even think about it in the West. I didn't think about it. Robin shared that with me because she started seeing the effects that the lemon every day was having on my wellness, and switched me over to the lime, and it made a huge difference. So I'm sure Robin will tell you a whole lot more, but I just wanted to share that one thing that's personal to us, and that we noticed something so simple.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so the doshas, they sort of help you to know what things to eat. And as Terry said, something as simple as replacing lemon with lime can make a huge difference in your how you feel every day. And once you know your dosha, you can make those kinds of choices and actually document, if you're the journaler type, exactly how you feel. And I usually recommend people do it for at least a couple of weeks to feel some of the changes and be aware, because it sounds silly. Eating lime instead of lemon, it will make a change. But it really, really does help. And there are so many other little food combination things that are for your specific dosha that are going to make you feel better. So if you're interested and you need to find out what your dosha is, you certainly can email us, as we said, info@ujvalaayc.com.
Yay.
And I'll get back to you.
Yeah. All right. So what other questions do we have? Do you have any over there?
Let's see, I did have, I had written some down that had come in. Hang on, here we go. The next one actually is probably going to be Terry. I'm looking at this. It says, how long should I meditate? And what position is best to meditate in? Like how to sit, I guess, is what they mean.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's a very broad topic, and it's probably a whole show.
Yeah.
But the long and short of it, see, how long should I meditate? How the long and short? Anyway, so how long should you meditate? Well, that's going to depend on a lot of factors. First of all, nobody expects you to sit down and begin meditating and meditate for an hour or even 30 minutes. Let's face it, in the West, we are trained to be constantly stimulated, to be constantly thinking, to be constantly in touch with every random thought that goes through our minds. And typically we're taught to, blog them or Facebook them or whatever, Instagram them or whatever method of expressing ourselves we have at our fingertips. And that's often to our detriment, frankly, because sometimes if you, cool off before you, tweet something, you're probably going to be healthier and happier. But meditation takes practice. And, I talked at the top of the show about the homework assignment I gave last week, and I'm going to repeat that. Take a simple candle, or I prefer an oil lamp that really looks like a small bowl with a pinch pot, really kind of thing, with a little spout pinched into it. Put oil in that and a cotton wick, and let the cotton wick lay into the little, what looks like a pouring spout. I'll be honest with you. If you go to the craft store or the garden center, and they have these little 3-inch terracotta plates that go under a terracotta pot, you can get the smallest one of those, put some oil in it, and pull a wick up, and it gives you a very steady flame. Use like olive oil, or you can get in some places, if you've got an Indian grocery near you, you can get mustard oil, which is a great oil for burning. It's also a great oil for self-care and dinacharya, which is another topic. But that's an external use. It's typically less expensive because it's not going to be consumed. So, but find an oil that will burn. You can even use just vegetable oil, but something to put in it and a little cotton wick. It will give you the most amazing steady flame. It won't flicker nearly as much as a paraffin candle will. And look at that candle, look at that lamp, that flame, and relax. Blink when you need to. This isn't an exercise in staring down the candle. Blink when you need to, but focus on the flame. When a thought comes in, just treat it like your child while you're doing something important. Say, I'll get to you in just a minute. I see you. It's okay. I'll get to you in just a minute. Every thought that comes in, don't wrestle with it. Don't fight it. Just acknowledge it. Say, yes, I need to think about dinner. I'll think about that in a minute. Yes, I know I need to get the kids after school. I'll deal with that in a minute. And whatever thought comes in, just set it aside and work on focusing on nothing but that flame. If you can do that the first time for 5 minutes, then you're already well on your way. Most people, myself included, when I started doing this, a decade or so ago, probably longer, we'll not talk about how long, but I couldn't sit for 5 minutes and look at a candle or a flame. Now I can, depending on what's going on around me, and I mean, it's going to change day by day. I can go, 20, 30 minutes before I get distracted. If I had a little more, quiet space, then, I might could go longer. The point is, the time you spend doing it isn't the length of time isn't as important as the quality of it. If you can spend 15 minutes a day sitting and meditating, and that's just one technique. There's a variety of techniques. We could talk about, we did a show last week on meditation, and I could do another probably 2 hours. But, you know, pick one technique, something simple like that to get you started. And if you have any more, if you want to work with me on other techniques, again, you can email us info@ujvalaayc.com, and we'll get with you and work out some kind of practice that we can work on together. Now, as for position, position is, it's interesting in the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali talks about basically sit down, shut up, and listen. And he mentions asana once. And he basically says, sit down, cross your legs, get comfortable, and meditate. And, you know, you're starting, it's a comfortable position to breathe, some position where you can sit comfortably for 20, 30 minutes without having to move, without your body becoming uncomfortable, because that's the biggest distraction, kids. But if my back is starting to hurt or my buttocks are starting to hurt, that's going to break my concentration quicker than any of the other distractions. So any position where you can sit comfortably for 20 minutes to start, that's a good position. I like to sit on the floor on a pillow. Simple cross my legs. I'm not even going to try. With my knees and the number of poles I've climbed in my life, to try to twist my legs up into the lotus position. Maybe one day I'll get there, but right now I just sit simple, cross my legs, sit with the lamp at the level with my shoulders and my eyes, so that I can just sit and comfortably look at the light. And it could be, you know, a statue. You know, if you're particularly into a particular deity, certainly look at that statue instead of the flame. Whatever it is, it's just a focal point. But, you know, any position, if you have problems sitting on the floor like that, lean against the wall. Sit in a straight back chair, something you can lean back and straighten your back, pull your shoulders back, but sit upright. Then that is certainly a good position, and you can use the chair or the wall to support you. You know, asana practice will certainly help you strengthen those back muscles in your core so that you can sit comfortably. And honestly, most of yoga, when people are talking about asana practice, asana is designed to strengthen the body to a point where you can sit comfortably for 20 minutes or 30 minutes and meditate. You know, asana was originally designed specifically to prepare the body to sit quietly for your meditation practice. Believe it or not, in the West, we've taken asana to a level. You know, Robin was talking earlier about how in the West we take everything to excess. And asana is one of those things that we've taken, and we've taken that one part of the eight limbs and we've run with it and built it into a whole industry when it was intended to be a small portion of an overall practice of yoga geared toward meditation and enlightenment. So, you know, Eastern concepts versus Western concepts are interesting play. So I hope that answers the question to a certain degree. If you have any questions about this further, again, email info@ujvalaayc.com. And we can get together and explore this further. What's next?
The next question, I know probably, I think we've talked a little bit about this before in the air, but I think there's so much confusion about this topic that I think it bears repeating. The next question is, what is karma and how does it affect me?
Okay. Eastern versus Western concepts of karma. All right. In Western spiritual thought, people have taken that word, karma, and applied it to some version of the rule of threes. What you do returns mm-hmm. to you in three times. So it presupposes that the universe has this cosmic tote board, and that the universe actually cares if you do something that you're going to get paid back for it. And that's, you know, I've always struggled with that idea, and I've never applied the word karma to it. I have known, you know, I minored in Asian studies at university, so, and I will really not talk about how long ago that was. But I have known most of my adult life that karma was not the way we use it in the West. So what is karma to Eastern thinking, to its truest meaning, going back to the Sanskrit? Karma is attachment. Let that sink in for a second. Karma is attachment. If you desire something, then you become attached to it. Even something good, like I love my wife. I love my wife desperately. It is possible for that love, that attachment, to become so strong that in the next incarnation, I am forced to return to seek that feeling again, to seek that love again. That attachment would keep me in the cycle of reincarnation, the cycle of rebirth. The idea of karma and working toward removing karma, because any karma is attachment. Any attachment could bring you back. So the idea of releasing attachment means to have a healthy love, but understanding that is temporal in this incarnation, and to enjoy that relationship and to nurture that relationship, but not to grasp it so hard that it causes you to be stuck in a cycle of rebirth. I mean, it could be something as simple as I love chocolate milkshakes, I love donuts, I love, you know, whatever. But it can also be bad things. More often people think about the bad things, that you do this and then it's got an attachment, you know, with it. There's a, you know, guilt attached to that action, which then becomes a cycle of thinking and attachment. If we're really attached to the outcome of a charity that we do, and we want to get some recognition for it, there's an attachment there. We didn't do it simply because it was the right thing to do and let go of the outcome. Very often we do these things and we want our name in the paper, or we want to be recognized in some way. That wanting is attachment. So the releasing of desire is the idea of removing or letting go of karma. Now, some philosophers suggest that karma follows us from one incarnation to the next, and that may be true, but that is a past attachment that forced us into the cycle of rebirth. And so that past attachment could cause us to reincarnate and have to do this again, but the goal of each incarnation in Eastern thinking is to remove attachments. That's particularly hard for a householder, someone who's not a renunciate. You know, because you've got real life. And that goes back to the how long should I meditate question as well. You know, as a husband and a father, I have responsibilities. I have dharma. And that's another word that's misconstrued and misused in the West. Dharma is not your life goal or your life purpose. Dharma is the rules attached to the roles that you assume. As a husband, I have certain responsibilities to my wife. As a father, I have certain responsibilities to my children. As a teacher, I have certain responsibilities to my students. That's Dharma. Those responsibilities have to be met, or I'm living out of sync with the universe. So how much time should you spend meditating? Well, certainly no more than you can afford and still get your responsibilities taken care of. So all of these questions are way bigger than one show, certainly bigger than the time I have tonight. But we can certainly look at having additional conversations about this, and I look forward to additional questions. And let's see, we're at a quarter from the top of the hour. We have time for one more question.
Okay, the last question that I have on my list, I don't know about what you have on your list. How do I align my day? Oh, how do I align my day-to-day life with the principles of the niyamas and the...
Oh, wow. That's another four or five shows. but let's see if I can do that in just about 6 or 7 minutes, because I want to wrap up and... not run over tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The yamas and the niyamas. Earlier I mentioned that asana is one of the eight limbs of Ashtanga yoga. And the first limb and the second limb are the yamas and the niyamas. And Patanjali, when he wrote the Yoga Sutras, developed a system when you gain enlightenment. Understand, that's all the Yoga Sutras is supposed to do. It's supposed to help you obtain enlightenment. So he believed and he wrote that the first step was to start regulating our behaviors. How about that? A Eastern idea of the thou shalt not. Thou shalt not commit violence. That includes violence against yourself. Pause for a moment and think about how many times you say you're inside your head bad things about yourself. Well, that violates ahimsa. You have committed a violence against yourself. How many times do you complain about the other drivers? How many times do you complain about the other people in line? Those are all examples, subtle, but they are examples of violating ahimsa, which is nonviolence. A violent thought is still violence. It still affects you. It may not affect the other person. The other person may be completely blissfully unaware that you're whining and bitching about their driving. But it affects you. When you start regulating yourself, you begin to move toward a state where you can attain meditation and enlightenment. The yamas. So I've already mentioned ahimsa, which is nonviolence. Satya, which is non-lying, is essentially what it means. You know, telling the truth. Frankly, it's easier to remember. Ashteya. Ashteya is not stealing. These are all pretty simple rules for living in a polite society. This one's a little more complicated. It's called brahmacharya, and it means non-excess. I'll come back to that one in a minute. And then aparigraha, which is non-possessiveness, non-greed, non-hoarding. How much in the West do we spend time collecting stuff? I want more stuff. If I get more stuff, I'll be happy. if I just get that one more car or that one more statue or that one more, you know, whatever bonus, and is it the pool in my backyard and whatever it is, and we hoard and we keep it to ourselves. We're like smog sitting on our pile of gold.
So true.
And that violates a paragraha. We should not be hoarding. We should be letting, you know, keep enough to live comfortably, certainly. Take care of your responsibilities. Again, dharma is the rule. Dharma is the first rule. So if you've got responsibilities as a mother, a father, there's actually responsibilities, dharma, responsibilities of a child to a parent. All of these, you know, maintain dharma. Do what you need to do to take care of your family, certainly. But beyond that, hoarding is wrong. Paragraha is not hoarding. So returning to brahmacharya, non-excess. Now here we go, coming into the holidays. Returning to our topic at the beginning of the show and our workshop, and stresses at the holidays, you know, how to eat right at the holidays. All of it's about non-excess. If you can maintain brahmacharya through the holidays, you will feel better on the other side of it. Now, often brahmacharya is interpreted as celibacy. And that is a misnomer. In my opinion, celibacy violates your dharmic responsibilities to your partner, your relationship, physical relationship within healthy bounds is certainly part of brahmacharya, because brahmacharya means basically walk with God. So keeping things within healthy bounds, again, not excess. Oh, here we go. Is certainly part of brahmacharya, but the absolute renunciation of physical pleasure is not part of the dharma of a healthy relationship. So understand that dharma is the first rule, and then all of this has to fit within it. Now, if you're a renunciate and you wander off into the forest and you know, stay under a tree for 3 days and have to move again so you're not attached to that tree, then certainly celibacy would become a factor. But as a householder, someone living in the world, dharma requires certain responsibilities, physical responsibilities to our partner. So brahmacharya is not celibacy in the traditional sense. And let's see, I'm going to hit the niyamas, which are personal practices. These are the thou shoulds, essentially. Satya is purity, so we should seek purity, cleanliness of our bodies, cleanliness of our minds, cleanliness of our souls. And again, the Ayurvedic nutrition comes into play, because that will help us align our body, our mind, and our spirit. Santosha, again, we're seeking to release attachment and desire. You know, what's the line from Harry Potter about the happiest man in the world wants everything he has and doesn't want anything more? So, you know, that is Santosha. Tapas is self-discipline, and it's not like, you know, restrictions, but it's more about training your senses and practicing. It's about doing your practice on a regular basis. So if you're going to meditate, meditate. Meditate every day. Try to do it at the same time. Try to get better at it. That's tapas. It's actually doing it. Svadhyaya. La, 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 la. That one's a tough word. I'm studying Sanskrit, and that one still struggles with me. Self-study, inner exploration. That's where you start really becoming self-aware. And I mentioned earlier, think about what your thoughts are. Note your thoughts, that's part of Svadhyaya. I'll get it in a minute. And then lastly, Ishvara Pranadana is surrender, giving yourself to the divine, giving yourself to the process, releasing attachment to the outcome. Do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because you want a certain outcome. So that's a nutshell. As you can see, there's, you know, tons of discussion. I could probably do a show on each of the yamas and niyamas and still have room left to talk because everybody's going to interpret it differently. It's not my job to tell you how to interpret it, just to help guide you and let you start making your own decisions. So what is it I used to say? I don't have your answers. People would ask me about what's the answer to such and such, and I say I don't have your answers. I have my answers.
Exactly.
I've got a lot of opinions, and I'll share those, but ultimately you have to find your answers. So with that said, I want to thank the question writers. These were some great questions and some definite conversation starters, things to talk about. Again, if you're interested in asking a question, and the next time we do a question and answer, we'll get your question on the air. Or if you are interested in pursuing these conversations more deeply, whether it's questions for me or questions for Robin, email info@
My, bless you.
Info@ ujvalaayc.com, ujjvalaayc.com. And we will certainly get back to you, and we can discuss these topics in greater detail and perhaps work out some kind of practice together. So with that said, I do want to remind everybody that on the 15th, we're having our holiday survival guide workshop. Go to the website, ujvalaayc.com, and in the very center at the top of the tabs is the survival, you know, holiday survival guide workshop link. Click on that. It'll take you to a page explaining the whole workshop, and it'll give you a link there to sign up. And that will take you into the payment system, and it's $29.99. Small price for all you're going to get, cooking with Robin, some recipes, a guided meditation by me, some meditation techniques to discuss, as well as just stress relief ideas and discussion, a couple of breakout sessions that we'll do, and all of that for $29.99. So you don't want to miss out. Space will be limited. Also, want to make sure that you get a chance to sign up for the Inspire program. Inspire program is Robin's free program, helping people to get together and talk about their goals. And I'll let you talk a little bit about it, Robin.
In the Inspire group, we all have our own different wellness goals, whether it's to lose weight. We have somebody who's quitting smoking, stop being so sedentary and get up and get moving. Whatever the wellness goal is, some of the wellness goals also include people who are struggling with depression and anxiety, particularly right now. So we talk about things. We talk about tips on how to overcome, you know, some of the issues and how to move forward in a supportive way possible. We talk about specifics. We have recipes. We talk about things like how to keep a better mental balance and how to avoid pitfalls and difficult situations and how to deal with them. It's basically a bunch of people who get together and talk about their challenges and their successes, and we support each other, which is really a hard thing to find these days, if you think about it. And it's free. We don't charge anything for it. It's every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Zoom meeting. And if you're interested, if you're interested in joining us, all you need to do is send an email up to that info@ujvalaayc.com, and you will get the get a welcome letter. You also can go and join the Inspire group on our website at the ujvalaayc.com. So either way, you can find the Inspire group. It's pretty easy to join.
Yeah, on the website, if you look at the tabs across the top, second from the right is offerings. Mouse over that and you'll get a drop down and it'll say Inspire. And click on that and it'll take you through the sign up process. It's a free program. The idea is to support each other and to share. So with all of that said, we are at the top of the hour. And we try to get out of here by 10 o'clock so the people on the East Coast can get to sleep when they're supposed to. Ayurvedically speaking, they should be in bed by 9, asleep by 10, unless it's Tuesday night when you're listening to us. So with all of that, I want to thank everyone. Thank our question writers one more time. Thank all of our listeners. Thank my beautiful wife.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you, Don.
Wish everyone a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night, namaste, and blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.